know the pieces of the apostles who are able to admire the magnificent work of Jesus in his establishment of the church. As you know, our Lord founded the church on the 12 apostles. These were referred to as the pillars. And the magnificence of the work of Jesus is to be found both in the stature of the men whom he chose as his apostles, and also in the work which he built upon them, which of course we are the inheritors of to this very day. I do not need to remind you that it is no small thing that Jesus established. There is nothing equivalent to the Catholic Church, any more than there is anything equivalent to the priesthood of Christ. There is nothing equivalent to the sacramental system. And this is due to the fact that it is a godly work. It is a work of divine power. And it will last until the end of the world, regardless of what kind of attacks, what kind of treachery, what kind of sin, what kind of falling away in experiences. The church will renew, and it will save those who are predestined to save. It is in the apostles that we find the proof of the greatness of Christ. I ask you to consider just for a moment the kind of men whom Jesus took to be his apostles. As you can possibly or probably will agree, the original plan was that those who formed the Sanhedrin were to become the chief members and the originators with Christ of the church, that is, the Jewish leaders. But they, almost to a man, rejected Christ, and indeed were the very ones who hated him most and who found it necessary to put him to death. Jesus understood this from the start, and so when he came, he found the plainest kind of men of no social status, men of no great education, men whom ordinary men would not even notice. And of the men who followed him, he chose 12 to be with him. And in a very few years, we find that he has formed these men into giants. If you are familiar with either the Acts of the Apostles or the early literature of the church, you are aware of what a grand shadow these men cast throughout the Roman world and indeed throughout the civilized world of that day. Truly marvelous. Wherever the apostles went, they carried with them all the power of Christ. They worked miracles, and they preached, and they gathered following, they established little churches, and before the authorities and the Jews realized it, another beginning had been made, one that all the power of Rome and all the hatred and envy of the Jews could not stamp out or destroy. As I say, in the early Christian literature, the speech about the apostles is impressive both for its understatement as well as for the suggestion that it gives of what grand persons they were. When the apostles came, it was simply said that they were one of the 12 and that they had been chosen by Christ to receive his message. They had been chosen to be the special witnesses of his resurrection. And when the apostles preached, it was with what wonderful, as admirable self-effacement, what beautiful humility, and still the power was there that all could discern. There was nothing that they really had to do for themselves. Everything was for Christ and for the church. It was only for them to hear the word, and those who had the Spirit in their hearts received it. It is noteworthy that within a very few years, the apostles had established the church, which, as I say, all the power of the Roman Empire could not extinguish, could not embarrass, and could not destroy. So that they were confronted with a dilemma, whether to let these men do what they were doing, in which case they were imminently affected. And everywhere they went, they left behind them a new little sapling church. Or they could simply mark him. And they found that this worked to their disadvantage also. Although, as you know, they did seek to murder all 12. I might add the 13th, who was St. Paul. And when they put the apostles to death, they found that in no way did this quell this fire which was streaking across both Europe and Asia. In no way did it dampen the enthusiasm or stifle the message. In no way did it disprove the truth of what they said. The second generation was both larger and hardier than the first. So that everything that was done against them proved the only, as it were, fanning the flames. Let us keep in mind that we are not in an altogether dissimilar situation now. I'm sure you are aware that powers that be, both in the Catholic Church and in the political sphere, are against what we stand for. There has been a perfect marriage between the socialist government and the conciliar church. The conciliar church preaches nothing but socialism, completely prostitutes Christian charity into the Marxist social gospel, which justifies taking that which belongs to private citizens and spreading it among whomever the government desires, including the governors themselves. The conciliar church, as well as the liberal churches of the Protestant denominations, have taken this false doctrine to themselves, so that you find that there is a very great similarity between the spirit that now opposes what we stand for, namely the ancient doctrine, and what they find as a threat. They resent what we do and what we believe. As I say, the government and the churches work hand in hand to try to stifle and to embarrass that which we do. There is a further similarity, and I challenge you men particularly with this fact. It is for you to keep the faith alive in this area, and it is for those who are in the Order of St. John to follow in a timid way, to imitate in a humble way the work of the apostles. And no more than the apostles were ready for what they were assigned, and you imagine yourself ready. But the grace will be given, and we expect from you something of the gigantism of hope and aspiration that we see in the apostles. We expect great work. We expect fidelity, unity, charity, and perfect loyalty to the church. When I say fidelity, we mean also, we expect not only the cherishing, the protecting our true doctrine of Christ as the Church has taught us, as well as fidelity to your commitments. We expect indeed that you will take on a stature which we never have anticipated, that you will accomplish things that you never dreamed of nor aspired to. The Lord expects that we will serve him, and it requires nothing but to do what he bids us, to take one step at a time, and never to fail and fail. Let us therefore entreat St. Matthias to be a hero to us and to protect our work, to help our decisions, to give us perfect unity and cooperation based on true charity. And let us accomplish what the Lord desires for the glory of this holy name.